Good morning, Ava. It is Tuesday, July 21st, 2026, and today's morning signal has one big idea running through almost everything. AI spending is now large enough to move national economies, but the scarce things investors need to watch are becoming very physical: gas, power, pipelines, housing, construction capacity, and financing.
Good morning, Guy. And the source discipline matters today. We have 7 valid episodes from 7 podcasts, all with full transcripts, but the numbers and views are still speaker claims from those shows, not independently re-underwritten filings or live market data. So we can build a decision framework, but we should not pretend every estimate has been proven.
Let's start with thoughts on the market, where Morgan Stanley's global economics team put the scale on AI capex. They raised their estimate of U.S. hyperscaler and AI-related spending to roughly $1.2 to $1.3 trillion in 2027, and potentially $1.4 trillion in 2028. Michael Gapin estimated that AI capex contributes about 40 basis points to U.S. growth this year and a similar amount next year.
But thoughts on the market also supplied the first important caveat. Roughly 60% of that gross spending goes toward computers and peripherals with high import content. So the headline capex number is not the domestic GDP impulse. Chaitin Ahaya said the mirror image appears in Asia, where semiconductor exports from the principal beneficiaries are growing about 90%, led by Korea, Taiwan, and Japan.
Exactly. Thoughts on the market described approximately $380 billion of 2026 AI and semiconductor capex in Asia, alongside $900 billion of energy capex, plus defense and supply chain onshoring. That is why the investable map is wider than U.S. hyperscalers. The spending leaks into Asian industrial activity and then runs into physical constraints back in the United States.
And thoughts on the market also made the U.S. resilience story look more concentrated than the headline suggests. Gapin cited about $180 trillion of household net worth, with roughly $55 trillion created over 5 years. His point was that AI supports both investment and upper-income consumption through equity wealth. Those look like two pillars, but they may partly be the same AI-linked pillar.
Right, so a reversal in the AI capital cycle could hit business investment and the wealth channel together. Thoughts on the market contrasted that with Europe, where Jens Eisenschmidt described AI investment plans as roughly 20 times smaller than those of the 7 U.S. hyperscalers. Potential growth is near 1%, while aging, defense, and interest costs rise. Even German fiscal expansion may push on a string if private investment does not respond.
The regional contrast from thoughts on the market is useful. Asia has several reinforcing investment engines: semiconductors, energy, defense, and onshoring. Ahaya saw 3 to 4 more years of visibility and noted regional corporate debt to GDP below 2019. Europe has fiscal capacity in places, but weaker private sector transmission. So the same global AI shock can create export growth in Asia, concentrated asset wealth in America, and a competitiveness problem in Europe.
Now let's move from trillions of dollars to molecules. On Invest Like the Best, Matthew Smith argued that natural gas is the underpriced input in one credible AI capex bear case. His base case has U.S. LNG export capacity moving from roughly 15 billion cubic feet per day today to about 35 by 2030, while the known production system can add about 20 billion cubic feet per day.
Invest Like the Best then layered compute demand on top of an already matched supply and export balance. Smith assigned roughly 5 billion cubic feet per day of credible incremental demand, mostly from AI compute, in his P50 case. Under more permissive project assumptions, that rises to 12 to 15. He expects the strain to show first in 2028 storage and forward procurement, rather than in today's spot price.
Which is the key disagreement with the curve. Invest Like the Best reported Smith's view that a flat, mid-$3 gas curve is masking a physical mismatch. He estimated current U.S. production around 110 to 112 billion cubic feet per day, with an upper deliverability range around 128 to 132 after developing known captured inventory.
Hold on though. Invest Like the Best made clear this is not just a geology question. Smith separated resource availability from processing, gathering, and interstate pipelines. Processing and gathering are not yet sufficient for the full production increase, and he said the country has built only one major interstate gas pipeline in roughly a decade. A molecule in the ground is not useful to a data center if infrastructure cannot deliver it.
That gives us a practical underwriting test from Invest Like the Best. Do not model data center economics only at today's forward curve. Stress them at $6, $10, and higher gas. ask for identified physical power and fuel contracts. And separate a strong generator order book from lifetime economics, because time to power can support bookings today while fuel scarcity threatens utilization later.
Invest Like the Best also gave conditional winners and losers, and we should keep the word conditional. Smith favored gas producers with remaining core inventory, especially Expand Energy and Range Resources. He also pointed to utility-scale solar owners whose output can reprice without fuel cost, residential solar with batteries, and eventually large-scale nuclear suppliers, including Westinghouse-linked Cameco and BWX Technologies.
On the cautious side, Invest Like the Best reported Smith's concern that new gas turbine and fuel cell manufacturing capacity could arrive just as higher fuel costs strand or underutilize plants. He cited Caterpillar's solar turbine capacity and Bloom Energy as exposed. Those are guest views, not TIFF recommendations, and the transcript rendered company names and tickers need verification before anybody trades them.
The indicator from Planet Money showed how the same CapEx wave hits local economies. Its Tale of Two Cities episode discussed Micron's proposed Syracuse Area Memory Complex, up to $100 billion of investment and an estimated 50,000 direct construction, contractor, and supplier jobs over a decade. Speakers said Syracuse home prices have already risen about 30% over 3 years.
The indicator also said 74% of Onondaga County land is zoned for single-family housing. Compare that with Austin's Samsung-linked semiconductor expansion, where land availability, permitting, density changes, and speculative construction allowed much more housing supply. The lesson is not that semiconductor fabs are inflationary everywhere. The lesson is that supply elasticity decides whether investment creates real capacity or mostly higher local prices.
Exactly.
From the indicator, the causal mechanism is concrete. A large project attracts workers and contractors. Housing supply responds slowly, and rents or home values become the release valve. If a city can permit density and build, more of the CapEx becomes real output and population growth. If it cannot, the gain is partly transferred into shelter inflation and political resistance.
Let's add the other balance sheet risk. On monetary matters, Nick Namath argued that systemic exposure has migrated from banks toward the roughly $10 trillion U.S. insurance balance sheet, which he said holds about $1 trillion of private credit. He described direct lending underwriting at roughly 7x adjusted EBITDA before aggressive addbacks, with payment-in-kind interest and fund-level leverage adding layers.
Monetary Matters laid out the mechanism. Life insurers and annuity writers hold illiquid, internally marked assets against liabilities that policyholders can surrender. Namath argued that reputational stress could raise surrenders, force asset sales, and reveal thin statutory capital. He cited surrender penalties falling from around 7% in year one to about 5% in year two for one product set, and said some private equity-backed insurers hold less than 10% level one assets.
But Monetary Matters did not let the bear case pass unchallenged. Host Jack Farley argued that insurance liabilities are less runnable than bank deposits, many level 2 assets remain saleable, and contagion requires both actual credit losses and a change in policyholder behavior. That is the right posture, monitoring framework, not concluded crisis.
So, from Monetary Matters, watch the sequence rather than the scary headline. We would need worsening direct lending defaults, rising payment-in-kind share, CLO downgrades, increasing insurer surrender rates, deteriorating private asset marks, pressure on statutory capital, and slowing flows into perpetual capital vehicles. Without those confirmations, the episode remains a bearish guest model rather than established, system-wide stress.
And that creates our first cross-current. Invest Like the Best says a smooth gas curve can hide future physical scarcity. Monetary Matters says smooth private asset marks can hide leverage, PIK interest, and refinancing risk. In both cases, a model price today may suppress a constraint that only appears when contracts roll, storage tightens, cash interest fails, or liabilities demand liquidity.
Now to technology. TBPN's Kimmy K3 episode described Moonshot AI's model as a credible open model catch-up. The host said Moonshot temporarily paused new subscriptions because demand exhausted GPU capacity. Citing semi-analysis, they argued that lower KV cache networking needs do not necessarily hurt NVIDIA because a model with more than 2.8 trillion parameters still needs a large scale-up domain and major bandwidth to distribute weights.
So TBPN's claim is subtle. Cheaper or more open intelligence can compress model layer rents and still increase infrastructure demand. If near-frontier models attract much more usage, inference can rise even as revenue per query falls. But the brief correctly says the technical claims, cyber results, token usage, and expected weight release all require independent benchmark verification.
The Verge cast framed the same model race as a geopolitical problem. Hayden Field said the old rule that China was 6 months behind now looks more like a maximum gap, potentially shorter for general models. She described distillation as using large volumes of outputs from a stronger model to accelerate a newer one, and cited Anthropic's allegation that DeepSeek, Moonshot, and Minimax generated about 16 million Claude exchanges through fraudulent accounts.
The Vergecast also argued that DeepSeek weakened the premise that advanced chip export controls alone can preserve the U.S. lead. That does not prove controls are useless. It suggests hardware restrictions can slow capability diffusion without stopping software adaptation, distillation, efficiency gains, or the circulation of open weights.
The A16Z podcast supplied the open source countercase through Hugging Face CEO Clement Dealing. He said distillation is widespread, but is not enough to make a weak laboratory strong. He argued that local and open models serve specific jobs, privacy-sensitive health or company data, offline use, and persistent agentic workloads where always calling a proprietary API may be costly or undesirable.
The A16Z podcast also reported that Hugging Face has crossed $100 million of annual recurring revenue, which DeLang presented as evidence that an open platform can monetize. He cited a Stanford study claiming roughly 70% of ChatGPT queries could be answered locally. And he expects routing to send routine work to cheaper specialized models while reserving expensive frontier systems for the hardest tasks.
Put TBPN, the Vergecast, and the A16Z podcast together and the profit pool could shift. Open model catch-up looks more bearish for proprietary model pricing than for aggregate compute. Routing, deployment, security, data infrastructure, memory, networking, and power may capture value across models. The vulnerable position is a capital-intensive lab without durable distribution, differentiated data, or a cost advantage.
But I want to push back. TBPN reported that Netflix used generative AI workflows in roughly 300 productions this year, concentrated in post-production, including 17 minutes of AI-enhanced footage in The American Experiment. That is a host reading of company commentary, not verification. Even if adoption is real, we still need evidence that usage growth outruns price compression and capital intensity.
I agree. The A16Z podcast's routing thesis can lower cost, concentration, refusal risk, and dependence on one provider. TBPN's scale thesis can keep GPUs busy. The Vergecast's leapfrogging thesis can force U.S. labs to spend more. But none of those episodes supplied audited returns on incremental hyperscaler capital or a primary benchmark proving a durable Chinese lead.
Let's make the policy piece explicit. The Vergecast said the U.S. toolkit remains unsettled. The Trump administration adjusted chip export policy while Congress considered stronger controls through the defense authorization process. The show argued that a visible Chinese lead could increase U.S. labs' political leverage by strengthening their claim that they need regulatory latitude to compete.
The A16Z podcast added that open weights cannot be controlled like an API. DeLang argued that removing them from one repository can push distribution to another repository or torrents. He distinguished inspectable, locally runnable weights from a foreign API that can collect data, bias outputs, or revoke access. That makes software diffusion a different policy object from chip shipments.
And the Vergecast highlighted the contradiction. Frontier labs invoke national security to seek freedom to race, while also asking government to protect them from distillation, define liability, or constrain rivals. So the investable policy signal is volatility, not a stable regime. Export restrictions, enforcement, open weight availability, and domestic data center backlash can move independently.
Which brings us to the full cross-current. Thoughts on the Market says AI demand globalizes the growth impulse through imported hardware and Asian exports. The Indicator says it localizes inflation through housing and permitting. Invest Like the Best says it localizes physical stress in gas production, storage, and pipelines. The same CapEx dollar can lift reported growth while raising utility and shelter costs in the communities hosting the infrastructure.
And supply elasticity determines the outcome. The Indicator's Austin versus Syracuse comparison shows it in housing. Thoughts on the Market shows Asia pairing semiconductor investment with much larger energy spending, while Europe struggles to turn public capacity into private investment. Capital spending creates prosperity where land, labor, power, permits, and financing respond. Where they do not, it creates crowding out.
What are we watching now? From Invest Like the Best, the most specific date is 2028. Watch whether U.S. gas forwards and physical contracts reprice higher as procurement rolls forward over the next 6 months. Also watch for LNG delays, higher than modeled production, or faster non-gas generation and long-duration storage. Those would falsify or weaken Smith shortage case.
From Thoughts on the Market, watch whether hyperscalers disclose energy taking a rising share of compute cost, whether Asian industrial orders broaden beyond semiconductors, and whether the 40 basis point U.S. growth contribution persists. Also test the concentration risk. If equity wealth rolls over, do investment and upper income consumption weaken together?
From The Indicator, watch housing completions, permitting, rents, home prices, and job growth around the Syracuse project. If housing supply absorbs semiconductor-linked population growth without sustained price pressure, the crowding out thesis weakens. If jobs outrun construction in a tightly zoned market, it strengthens.
From Monetary Matters, watch actual cash interest coverage, direct lending defaults, PIKUs, CLO downgrades, insurer surrenders, statutory capital decisions, private asset marks, and flows. The crisis case needs a chain: credit deterioration, policyholder behavior, forced liquidity, and capital impairment. One weak loan or one bearish interview is not enough.
From TBPN, The Vergecast, and the A16Z podcast, watch Independent Kimmy K, 3 benchmark replication, actual model weight availability, subscription capacity, routing adoption, and whether local models handle routine work at acceptable quality. Then watch the economics. Does more inference offset lower price per query, and does infrastructure utilization outrun the spending required to build it?
One final source quality note. Today's brief excluded 2 collector candidates. The intended pivot feed resolved to Andrew Osenga's unrelated show, and the intended no priors feed resolved to a StarTalk episode. No analytical claims from either were used. Official speaker label transcripts were also unavailable, and primary filings, statutory insurance schedules, forward curves, live prices, and independent AI benchmarks were outside today's deterministic input.
That is the right ending. The strongest signal is not simply that AI spending is huge. It is that returns now depend on connected systems, imported hardware, domestic power, gas delivery, buildable housing, model routing, and policy. The falsification work is as important as the excitement.
We will leave it there. This has been Morning Signal for Tuesday, July 21st, 2026. Thanks for listening.
Have a great morning. And verify the bottleneck before you pay for the growth story.